Good evening, everyone. Well, here we are again. So the good thing is we know how to do this. And the really wonderful thing is that we have a guest speaker tonight, Kathleen. And we've been really waiting and looking forward to hearing from her after her having spent the 3 months at Tassajara. Hopefully she remembers some of what happened. But it has been a while. So, Kathleen, thank you so much for coming. And Jill, it looks like you're taking care of Penny. So if you would pin Kathleen's larger and get rid of me.
Hi, everybody. Can everyone hear me? Good. Oh, gosh. Is there a way I can hide myself? Let's see.
You can switch, Kathleen, to gallery view.
Right, that's what
That won't make us switch, and we'll still see you nice and big. But then I know it's too distracting to look yourself that way. So, do you know where the gallery view is?
I do. Let me see if I can do that. Yeah. Good. Oh, good. Oh, that's way better. Oh, it's so nice to see everybody. It's really sweet. So thank you, Misha, for inviting me to do this. It's been kind of fun and kind of scary to get ready for it. As many of you know, last year I actually had the good fortune of being at two practice periods, the first one at City Center, just about exactly a year ago. I was there when the Ukraine war broke out. And then unexpectedly, I was at Tassajara both times working as part of the kitchen crew. Tassajara was 3 months, and tonight I'll focus on Tassajara. And I wish we were all in the same place. I was thinking tonight of the differences between them, but it's so nice to see everyone's face. So the theme at Tassajara for the fall practice period was absolute and relative truth. And I have to confess, my hearing was such that when I heard the first Dharma talk by Fu Schroeder, who was the teacher, I could hear the headline, absolute and relative truth, but then I didn't hear how she explained it. And I was left with thinking, I thought there were four truths. What are these two truths? And I had to go and ask her about that. And I came to think of the absolute as, you know, what we see at the world of infinity and beyond infinity and the great mystery that is our world. Where do we go when we die? Where do babies come from? And the relative, of course, is our mundane world of causes and conditions. However, as we all know, they both exist simultaneously. And Jill, the other morning, was explaining them as, or maybe it was an evening, interlaced like this. And most of the time, that makes my head hurt to try to think of them both. But I have to say that being on the kitchen crew was actually really a wonderful opportunity to try to consider them at the same time. The other part of being at Tassajara, and I'll tell a lot more about sort of the background and stuff, but of course anyone comes to any experience with their own story. And so throughout my time at Tassajara, I had my own story overlaid. And one of the biggest gifts of being there was simply having 3 months where there wasn't input coming in from outside. I mean, what a gift that can be. And so many, many memories came up, and lots of time for contemplation. In the midst of a pretty rigorous schedule as well. So there were 38 of us for the whole entire practice period. There were one or two people that left, but basically that was it. There's 38 people. That included two kids, two little darling kids, Mira and Milo. And their parents were there, as well as one was the director, one was had been the Tenzo, and two, the parents of Milo shared the Eno position. So we were there, and so the kitchen crew, of course, was cooking for that whole group. And most of the meals were formal meals in the Zendo. The Tassajara week was something that I hadn't known about before, but unlike the 7-day week out in the real world, the Tassajara week was basically 5 days, and then the 6th day was off. And so it became very easy to forget about Saturdays and Sundays, because they just kind of all blurred in, and we were more cued to when the mail would come and the produce would come. Those were big days, and they came just Monday and Wednesday. That was, and so often the mail was a week later than it might have been. The kitchen crew week was even different than that. So we had 4 days on, and then the 5th day was off. So we were always a little bit out of sync with the regular schedule. And every morning, though, we all got up. There was a wake-up bell that those of you who've been there remember this, but there was a wake-up bell where someone ran through camp with a bell at 4:30 in the morning. And so every day except the day that I was breakfast cook, I could go to the, there were two sittings and kinhin, and then a form, if there was sitting, kinhin, sitting, and then a formal service. And then there was Orioki breakfast served there. And then after that, there was this, there was a break after breakfast, and then there was a mandatory study hall time. So there was almost an hour where we were all required to be in the dining hall, where we would study in silence. And I have to say that was such a special part of it. It came to be where, you know, without you'd had real books and paper in silence. And it really, I really treasure that memory, because it allowed me to think and to put things together and let they had a great library, so I could bring books and do that. And then there were also three sesshin during the practice period, 2 5-days and 1 7-day. And the kitchen crew served during two of them, the 2 5-day, but then the middle one we had, there was a 7-day sesshin, and the kitchen crew got to take part in that. And there was a different group that was the kitchen crew during that time. And so, of course, so the whole time we were silent or functional speech, but the sesshin were even more silent and very, so even the kitchen crew, we worked in even more silence to respect that. And somewhere early on in my readings, I came across this quote that said, "To sit zazen is to turn towards the source of your delusions." And this became a really important concept to me, that just to keep turning towards things I was afraid of or any kinds of thought that came up. But I hadn't ever heard that quote before, that you were turning, that was part of zazen. And sometimes it felt like my breathing was like a metronome, that I could count the breathing, but then all these thoughts were running around, and I kept trying to rein them in, as we all do, and try to bring them back. But I found this concept of turning towards the source of my delusions a really important one. And as some of you know, at quite in opportune times, I'm often consumed with a kind of a self-doubt. And that was, that became one of the main things I tried to examine, not particularly because I wanted to, but because I was compelled to. It kept coming up and showing itself. And of course, the kitchen was a great opportunity for that as well. And as some of you know, I think mostly because of the short staff, I was asked to be the assistant fukuten. So that meant when the assistant cook was not there, I was the backup. And through strange circumstances of the practice period, there were times where I became the fukuten, and this was not my comfort zone, I have to confess. It was, but it was really a good time to try to work and look at that, of what made that uncomfortable for me. And yet, so we, you know, we got the meals out over and over again, and it was really an interesting example of causes and conditions, you know. So basically, you know, with causes and conditions, it's if this, then that, right? If I stay up too late at night, I won't be able to get up early in the morning. These are laws of our universe, our physical universe. I figured out that if I got my clothes all ready so that I could slip into them immediately, I could have just enough time to have coffee before the first period. That became a very precious thing. But if I didn't, if I missed a sweater or something, then I had to go straight to the zendo. And I'd never really thought until this practice period of just how much being in the kitchen, you have to trust the laws of the universe. You have to trust that, you know, it takes a certain amount of time to boil water, for example. Hi, Pixie. It's nice to see you. And I had a little notebook. I'll show it to you. This tiny little notebook that I kept with me all the time. I had a pocket in my vest that I kept it in. And in that notebook, I would write down all the different times for starting things. There were like at least 7 different kinds of rice, and each one had a different amount of time it took. And of course, when you're making 2 gallons worth of rice, it's a whole different ballgame than making it just for a family or something like that. So I kind of made a little spreadsheet in my little notebook where I'd say, I think it said, okay, brown basmati rice. First thing, rinse 8 cups of rice. At 10 a.m., get 3 gallons of boiling water from the samovar. Add the rice, bring to a boil, put weight on top of pot, turn down to low flame, check at 10:50, in pots at 11:30. So that was like one kind of rice. And then there were all these other kinds, and different, some days there was a Dharma event and that would change the schedule. So you were starting it earlier or later. And then on the very next page, I wrote, and I just found this when I was getting ready for my talk, I said, what does the mouth of a hungry ghost look like? So interspersed with like these recipes, I would scribble down these like questions I had about the Dharma talks or things like that. Every day in the kitchen, after the servers took the lunch up to the zendo. So basically we had these huge pots that we'd set out for the servers to carry up to the zendo. So we had to have our timing just perfect. So we had it, that the food had to be really hot, but not too hot and not too cold. And then we had to have it ready in the pots for the servers to come. And then they would carry it up to the zendo and serve. And then after that, we would have our own service every day in the kitchen. And I came to really treasure these services. And as many of you probably know, the service would always involve reading from Dogen's instructions to a cook. And so we probably read it 6 times through by the time the end of the practice period came. But we had a formal service. There were 7 of us on the kitchen crew, and at any one time there were 5 in the kitchen. And then after that formal service, so we were missing the formal service that was in the Zendo, but we had our own little service at the altar. And then after that, we would be at the kitchen table and have a meal together, which was often really nice as well. And so a key part of Dogen's instructions are, of course, is that cooking isn't just cooking, but it's a mindfulness practice. And that really became a challenge sometimes, you know, when you're on a deadline, you're trying madly to chop the vegetables and get the rice out, and at the same time, try to remember that you're being mindful and not burn the porridge at the same time. That became a challenge. And of course, as Fu Schroeder said, you know, it's sort of a matter of the practice that you're going to irritate each other, you know, just in the being this cauldron of 38 people and then the 7 that were the kitchen crew. I mean, we got to know each other and our insecurities and all that really well, you know, and we had a great head cook, Tenzo Dan. He was also a very creative cook. And so unlike Hiro, who'd been the Tenzo at City Center, who is a traditional Japanese cook, Dan really liked to wing it. He would give you a recipe for, say, 3 gallons of curry, but it wouldn't say how many, you know, how much oil to use, and so he really depended on us to really have a good sense of that. And at first, that was really hard for me. I really wanted to know, just like, is it a cup of oil? Is it what, you know? And I relied on the others, one of who had just come from the World Food Kitchen in Poland. So she was just an ace at cooking for vast quantities and winging it, basically. So I really had to stretch to learn to wing it. That was one of the challenges. So besides the laws of the phenomenal world, of course, there are the laws of the spiritual universe, right? Buddhism proposes that if we follow the spiritual laws of the universe, we can end suffering. It's a pretty big, proposal. Dogen said that just as negative actions result in more suffering, we can, through our intentions, make good things happen. And that Fu Schroeder, the teacher, said that one morning, and it came. I was kind of thinking, gosh, you know, that's so obvious, and yet I more often dwell on all of the ancient twisted karma and all of our repentances and stuff, and not so much of, gosh, if we have good intentions, that also can make a difference. That came as a wonderful kind of shock to me. It's kind of easy to overlook that, or at least I had. And at Tassajara, as at all Soto Zen temples around the world for centuries, when we chant the repentances, you know, all my ancient twisted karma, and then immediately recite our vows to take refuge in the 3 treasures. That's essentially describing the laws of the universe. And so it's such an interesting contrast to the causes and conditions of both the phenomenal world and the world of the spirit. Blanche Hartman, in her Living a Life of Vow, said that this requires a radical faith in the basic goodness, the wholeness of all beings. According to the Avatamsaka Sutra, Blanche Hartman said that Shakyamuni Buddha said on the morning of his enlightenment, that this requires faith that all beings have the wisdom and compassion of the awakened ones, but because of their attachments and delusions, they don't realize it. For myself, I feel so very fortunate to have been given the tools of self-discipline and of Zazen and of routines that can help bring me back. Something, one morning, this was in the kitchen, we were always prepping. And during Sesshin, we would be prepping, but also preparing, of course, for tea and things like that. And one morning, I was the breakfast cook, and which meant getting up another half hour earlier. And Dan came to me as I was getting ready for breakfast and asked if I could also think about making rosemary shortbread, which I'd given him the recipe for. And I've brought sometimes for service here at Zen Heart Sangha. And so I had my card, you know, it's a very simple recipe, but we needed to multiply it by six times. And I thought, oh my God, maybe I got it wrong. I can't imagine we need 12 cubes of butter. And I just completely doubted every bit of the very recipe that I myself had brought. And I could feel my heart started beating faster. It's still only, I'm still actually cooking the cereal and stuff for breakfast, but I'm already thinking, oh, this is wrong. This can't possibly be right. So I said to Dan, I said, Dan, I've got to check this. I'm really not sure, you know. And he said, well, you gave me the recipe, you know. And I said, yeah, but six times, that just can't be right. And he said, well, okay, check, you know. So I looked up the recipe, and sure enough, it was completely as I knew it was, this most simple recipe. But it gave me it gave me that opportunity to just like say, where does that self-doubt come from? What in the world could bring that, you know, instead of just trusting the very recipe that you yourself brought and that Dan wanted to do enough, you know. So it was that kind of thing that would happen over and over. And luckily, there were people there, and there was the practice that could bring me back and just say, gosh, you know, I better just really examine that, you know. That's and sure enough, I could start to see some of the roots of all that self-doubt. And that was really pretty wonderful to have kind of the space to do that, and to try to have compassion for that part of me that had that fear and that self-doubt. So that's my whole talk. I want to thank all of you for being here, of course, and for Misha and Jill, for the teachers at Tassajara, Fu Schroeder, who went way beyond her original job description, because there was no head monk there. So she had to really, really kick in. Leslie James, who is the abiding teacher who lives out at Jamesburg and came in every week. And Linda Galligan, the Tonto, as well as my kitchen crew, and Dan the Tenzo, and for that matter, Hiro at City Center, who had been my Tenzo then too. So any questions, I'm happy to try to answer, and thank you. Oh wait, I have something to read before I forgot. Do I have time, Misha? I think so, right?
Yeah, you actually have lots of time because we don't have any cleanup.
Okay. Oh, good. Well, so I want to thank everybody for having sent me things while I was there. It was so wonderful to get mail. I mean, it was just so wonderful. And my wonderful friend, Amy Schumann, who's been my friend since we were in college together, sent me this magnificent poem by a friend of hers named Susan Stewart. It's called Every True Miracle. Every true miracle happens in the morning. The heads and feet of our beds live on, and between them, our own heads and feet. And between them, we say, it's us, we're still here, with voices that haven't cracked or split, that haven't changed keys in the night. To brush our teeth is not to destroy them. Only a little hair falls out, hardly any skin comes off on the washcloth. The inhabitants match the mailbox, and the days of the week are reliable. This is as astonishing as orange juice or soap that has risen from ashes, as smooth and white as an angel's hand, and much simpler to believe in. For the body never blows up. In spite of heavy winds, no limbs fall off. The birds never wake up angrily. The milkman walks on toes of tremendous kindness. When it rains, the world doesn't melt. And when it snows, the snow disappears, not the porch roof. Not a single building has switched with another. Not a single bridge has buckled under by daybreak with the weight of stars and buses. The garden shakes off the dew like a puppy. Light runs around the town without a wheelchair. The church bells are acting like acrobats. Even the mice survive. A stranger is waking across the river, and by nightfall, you may walk into his sleep. Every true miracle. So let's see. Can I see? Maybe somebody else can see.